Welcome to the 2021 BRP Proposed Business Initiative Session 1. Carla Anderson's going to walk us through some slides on technical and process items related to this meeting.
Perfect. Thanks and welcome everyone to our Proposed Business Initiatives Session 1, the kickoff. We are recording this session, and we will be posting the recording, the audio recording, up on our website. This is just our notice for the Freedom and Information and Protection of Privacy Act that we are recording, and we just wanted to let our stakeholders know that we are doing that. And this is just for the purpose of capturing stakeholder input for the 2021 budget review process. And Mike, if we can just move to the next slide. Thanks. And as we are all aware, we are still in the midst of our pandemic, and our top priorities are the health and well-being of our employees and our stakeholders, and continue to meet the electricity needs of all Albertans. As we've stated on our website, we will be continuing our virtual sessions through our Zoom tool for the foreseeable future. Thanks. And now we're just going to move through to our introductions of who is going to be on the call from the ISO. So we've got Todd Fjor, our VP of Finance and our Chief Financial Officer. Todd, if you just want to give a wave. Dennis, you may not be able to see him, but Dennis Freilich, he's our VP Grid Reliability. You might have to talk for you to see him.
Good morning, everyone.
There you go. Thanks, Dennis. Miranda Keating Erickson, she's our VP Markets. Thank you, Miranda. Pauline McLean, she's our VP Law, General Counsel, and Corporate Secretary.
Hello.
Good morning. Karen Campbell, she spoke at the beginning. That's our Director, Settlement Credit and Business Planning. Karen, if you wanted to give a wave. Mike Deesing, he doesn't have his video on, but he's assisting with our slide deck. And he's our Director, Corporate Communications. And again, as Karen indicated, I'm Carla Anderson, and I work in the Stakeholder Engagement Communications Group. So the purpose of this session, we had that in the invite and up on our website, is we want to review the 2021 budget review process, present status updates on the 2020 business initiatives, and then present, discuss, and obtain your feedback on our new proposed 2021 business initiatives as identified. And Mike, if we want to just move. These are just all the registered session attendees that we've had as of end of day yesterday. And so we've got quite a range of attendees that are part of this call. And if we just want to move to the next slide, Mike. So the agenda. We've done our welcome and introductions. We're going to be setting the stage with our strategic plan context, reviewing the BRP with the schedule and the learnings that we've learned from last year, the status of our 2020 external business initiatives, those that were completed and those that will be continuing that are multi-year, moving into 2021, the proposed new external business initiatives. We'll be looking for stakeholder discussion and input throughout the presentation, and I'll go through in the next few slides how you ask questions as we move through this process, but please ask questions throughout the presentation. We will, at the end, again, ask for any last questions, but we do want to have this as an interactive discussion as we move through the presentation. And then we'll do a session closeout, a Zoom poll to get some feedback on the session and next steps. Thanks. And so the ISO, as many of you may be aware, we rolled out early this year the ISO Stakeholder Engagement Framework. These are our engagement principles, and this is really our foundation of our approach to stakeholder engagement throughout the ISO. And just as we move through this this virtual session, participation of everyone is critical to the engagement process, and we want to ensure everyone has the opportunity to participate. As if you've been on a Zoom webinar, you know that you can raise your virtual hand, or you can also type into Q&As, which I'll get to in a moment. But we just want to make sure that we're listening to everyone's perspectives. You're disagreeing respectfully, you're balancing airtime fairly, and you're just keeping an open mind. And so using Zoom, for those that have participated in the in any of our Zoom webinars in the past or through a Zoom meeting, you've all joined in listen-only mode, and all the attendee cameras are disabled and the microphones muted. And so when asking a virtual question or typing in a question, if you could please state the organization that you work for and then your first and last name, just so anybody that's on a phone, like a conference call, that they also can understand and hear who the question is coming from. And there is two ways to ask questions throughout the presentation. If you'd like to raise your virtual hand, you can click the icon, and we will see that you've raised your hand. I will then unmute your microphone. You, in turn, will get a request to unmute. You'll click that, and then your microphone will be open, and you'll be able to ask your question and have a discussion. So you can also ask questions by typing them into the Q&A window. You click on that icon, and then you just type in your question. There is an opportunity to upvote questions that get asked by any of the attendees. And when you upvote, the most popular questions then rise to the top of the Q&A window so that we can see that, and all attendees can see that as well. We'll just move to that. And this is just, if you're not familiar with Zoom, where to access those raise your hand or Q&A controls. If you're on a computer, PC, Mac, 2-in-1 tablet, just hover your cursor over the bottom of the screen, and that's where you'll see the raise hand, lower hand, or the Q&A button. If you're using a smartphone, similar, they'll always be there, the raise hand, lower hand, and the Q&A icon. And the next slide, 13, is the last kind of housekeeping slide. And this is if you're accessing the webinar via a conference call. So if you've called in and you're not accessing through the internet and through the web, you can still ask a question through Q&A and have and allow us to see that you've raised your hand. And that's just hit a *9 on your dial pad, and then we'll see that you've raised your hand. You will also have to unmute yourself. And that's a *6 is to toggle between mute and unmute. And that's just if you've just called in via kind of a conference call. And I think that's it for housekeeping. So I'm going to pass this on now to Todd to set the context. Todd?
Great. Thanks, Carla. And welcome everybody to our BRP process this year. So as Carla said, I'm going to give you a little bit of strategic plan context. And over the next few slides, I'm going to cover off providing a brief overview of our strategic plan, how our strategic plan and business plan align, and a little bit about our strategic focus as we go forward. So these are on slides 15 through 18, and Mike has actually gone to slide 15. Our strategic plan really charts our direction as an organization to fulfill our mandate and achieve our long-term vision. And this is pretty similar to other strategic plans that you may be familiar with. Generally, strategic plans are structurally pretty similar. The way they've been set up and established. In 2018, we went through a development process to develop a new strategic plan, which covered a five-year period from 2019 to 2023. So every 5 years, we tend to go through a strategic planning process or a major strategic planning process to create a new strategic plan. And on an annual basis, we go back and look at the strategic plans to see if it still makes sense given the current environment that we're operating within. This year, we actually completed the annual review in the spring of 2020 for the next year, which we'll do again in 2021. So a little bit of context on process. The focus of our current strategic plan is that the electricity industry is on the cusp of transformational change, as are several other industries that we're aware of, such as banking services, retail, mining. So fairly common that a lot of industries are going through transformational change right now. Technology advancements, new business models, and increased digitization, as well as changing consumer preferences and demographics, will begin to have a profound impact on the way electricity is produced, consumed, and exchanged. These trends will directly impact the pace and intensity of this industry transformation, which is why our work over the next 5 years is so critical. We believe as important as a steward of reliability for the province that we are ready as this transformation occurs. It will require us to be agile, responsive, and expand our capabilities as an organization going forward. On slides 16 and 17, 16 provides our mission and vision. Mission is what we do. This is really our operational mandate. So if you look at the Electric Utilities Act, it kind of states what our mandate is. Vision is where we want or need to go. And this is really about shaping the transformation of the Alberta electricity future for the benefit of Albertans. So that's the mission and vision. Mike, if you could maybe just flip to the next slide. On the next slide, we've outlined three strategic objectives: people, framework, and technology. The people one is about people and process. It's ensuring that we are positioned to meet the future demands. The framework one is about creating a foundation that provides clarity to investors. And technology is about the electricity system being positioned to accommodate the influx of new technologies we expect to occur in the future. So at a very high level, that is our strategic plan. Thanks, Mike, for moving ahead to slide 17. So slide 17 is a graphic of the alignment between our strategic plan and our business plan. As indicated, the strategic plan establishes the corporate direction for the next 5 years. Actually, potentially it could be more than 5 years, depending how it plays out. The purpose of the business plan is to operationalize the strategic plan. The business plan identifies the initiatives we plan on working on over the next year and the resources we require to fund our business. You will see that in the back of our presentation, we have aligned our business initiatives with the strategic objectives of framework, technology, and people. So our strategic, just a couple comments on our strategic focus. We recognize the cost pressures families, business owners, farmers, and commercial and industrial consumers are facing as Albertans continue to be impacted by COVID-19 pandemic and low oil prices. As the organization responsible for managing the safe, reliable, and economic operation of the provincial power system, we are committed to doing what we can within our mandate to enable Alberta's future prosperity by focusing on driving better cost management across the industry value chain, facilitating business in the province, and creating a simpler, more agile approach to our business processes. And if you're not aware, recently we posted information on our website on our cost management activities, and you can find it under ISO cost management. So it's actually a one-pager about some of the significant opportunities we've identified for saving money going forward. And maybe I'll ask Dennis to talk about a couple of them, because I think a couple of them are fairly significant related to transmission and to markets. Dennis?
Sure, Todd. So for those who have gone to our website and saw the cost management summary, we've identified about $260 million of future savings. Those are kind of broken down into three areas from our perspective. One is related to system projects and where we've been able to reduce future cost estimates on large transmission projects. As it relates to challenging some cost estimates from TFOs, as well as adjust some standards on the transmission lines to relax them in order to reduce costs without impacting reliability materially. Another bucket would be customer projects, and there we're looking at flexibility around some of our standards for tapping the transmission lines, which reduces interconnection costs, and challenging the distribution companies a little bit on their requests for transmission connection, and seeing if we can find better solutions for those requests. And then the third bucket is just generally if we can find ways to either provide waivers or variances to reduce costs and we don't see a material impact to reliability, then we will do that. And we've done that in a few situations. One is around control centers and the classification of them for smaller entities that have them, that type of thing. So that's kind of a quick summary of some of the areas we've driven some cost savings going forward. And we'll talk about continuing to do that. Back to you, Todd.
Great. So maybe I'll turn it back to you, Carla or Karen, for
questions. It looks like we've got a question from Victoria. Can you explain what the industry value chain is?
Dennis, maybe that's one you can respond to.
Sure. So Vittoria, thanks for the question. What we're referring to there is we're cognizant from generation through transmission, through distribution, down to the customer side of the meter and implications on the other customer side of the meter. We would describe the value chain from an electricity perspective in that respect. And of course, it'll include suppliers into that equation as well. So we're just not focused on what I would call just the bulk part of the system, but we recognize as the transformation's unfolding, we need to have a view across that entire value chain, and where we can from our mandate help to reduce costs across that value chain, whether it's through market changes or whatever, that's what we'll be looking to focus on as we go forward.
Thank you, Dennis and Vittoria. Anyone else have any questions for this section?
All right, looks, Karen, that you can kick off this next section.
Can move on to, so this is just a review over the next few slides of the 2021 budget review process. So moving on to the next slide, please. So the ISO is engaging with market participants who are interested in participating in the process, and we will use your feedback to help establish the ISO's business plan and budget for 2021. The BRP includes the transmission line loss costs, the business initiatives, and our own costs. And then we provide information for the board to make their decision at the end of the process. On to the next slide. So as Todd mentioned, the business initiatives align with the 2019 and 2023 strategic plan, and they form the basis of the upcoming year's corporate goals. So this is the beginning of the process, and they are the foundation for the development of our budget. They tend to be multi-year in nature, as you know, and are typically external facing. And we also have some internal-based business initiatives that we'll provide some information on just to provide greater transparency to stakeholders. So this is, you've seen this before, these are the milestones and the dates for the 2021 BRP. So we started the process early this year with the invitation in July. Usually we'd have that in August. And then we've added this step with the initial business initiatives meeting for August 11th. So this is very much an exploratory meeting that we added to the process based on feedback we received last year. And then step three is the follow-up meeting, which is September 21st. And that's where we'll come back with the business initiatives and the feedback that we received from the stakeholders. And then going on at the same time, the ISO is developing our own costs and transmission operating forecast budget. And then step five, October 1st, we'll have a technical meeting on the actual costs. So that will be another stakeholder session that we'll have. And then step six is the stakeholder presentations to the ISO board, November 18th. And then the final is the decision from stakeholders. The decision from the board based on the information. On to the next slide, please. So as I've mentioned, we did have some key learnings from last year. We got a lot of feedback from most of the stakeholders that they would like to engage earlier in the process, especially when it comes to the business initiatives and having more input into those. They also wanted to hear from the VPs at the session so they could actually answer questions on their areas. So rather than just having some of the VPs, they wanted the key VPs, or just having Todd and I there. They wanted to actually have that interaction with the applicable VPs so they could give their feedback. They also wanted the materials sooner, which we've done. We're providing the materials for this session 5 days ahead. And they also wanted to engage senior level industry. So we've started the CEO roundtables this year as well. So any questions on the process? No? Okay, we can move on to the overview of the business initiatives. So moving on to the next slide. Oh, we have a question. So what actions is the ISO taking to achieve strategic objective 2 with respect to transmission and distribution development? Are you initiating anything to bring competition to regulated wires? So I think that's probably is that a Dennis or a Miranda?
I think it's probably a Dennis question, but I think when we get to the initiatives themselves, maybe Dennis can touch on that question.
Okay. So we'll hold that question till that section.
Till Dennis talks about the initiative, yeah.
Thank you, Akira. So as we go through this process, we have kind of three main questions that we'd like you to consider as you review the 2021 external business initiatives and consider what you think is appropriate to have. So the first question is, in your view, are the newly proposed 2021 external business initiatives when the ISO should advance in 2021 and why? In your view, are there certain business initiatives that are more critical than others and why? And in your view, are there any business initiatives not captured that you believe the ISO should advance and why? So you can consider these questions during the session, but you'll also have opportunity to respond to these questions as well as we go through the process. We can go on to the next one. So the business initiatives are... this is a breakdown of the business initiatives. So we have the external business initiatives for 2020 and 2021. So we've completed one business initiative from 2020. We have 8 external in-progress multi-year business initiatives that will go into 2021. So they've started in 2020 and they're going on into 2021. And then we have 2 new business initiatives that are external for 2021, for a total of 10 external business initiatives for 2021. And then we also have 6 internal base business multi-year initiatives that are internal focused, but we did have them last year. Most of them, one of them is new. And they're going into 2021, but we're not going to continue to report on them like we will this year because they are considered base business. We can go on to the next slide. This is just an overview visual of the 2021 business initiatives and 2020 business initiatives. And it includes the internal and external. So we can move on to the next slide, and we'll be going into these in the coming slides. So any questions on the business initiatives from that summary? Okay. We can move on then to Pauline.
Thanks, Karen. Oh, there's feedback. Does that sound okay to everybody, or is it just my computer? Hopefully just my computer. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to kick us off this morning to talk about our stakeholder engagement work in 2020. And hopefully this one is not a surprise to anyone. I think, again, most of you are aware that the organization initiated a shift in our approach to stakeholder engagement in the latter stages of 2019. And our renewed thinking with respect to how we wanted to undertake our engagements really culminated in the development of our stakeholder engagement framework, which Carla mentioned a little bit earlier on this morning. That stakeholder engagement framework, again, is published on our website. So when we prepared that framework, again, in order to implement what we've committed to in the framework and to achieve what we want to achieve, we did have to make a number of internal changes throughout the organization. We introduced new accountabilities with respect to stakeholder engagement. We created a number of different internal process changes to make sure, again, we were thinking about our engagements in the right strategic mindset, and that we were, again, developing them and executing them in a similar way. We also, again, bolstered a lot of our internal training and education around stakeholder engagement for various subject matter experts and other employees, again, who have a lot of work to do in this space as part of their daily jobs. So much of the internal infrastructure, if I can call it that, we have established in the first part of 2020. And our focus now is one of ensuring that we've operationalized the framework in the appropriate way. So again, our focus is turning more so to continued vigilance to ensure that, again, we're executing our engagements in an appropriate fashion. We're very concerned, again, about ensuring that comments that we receive through our engagements find the appropriate audience and home internally, and that they're actioned appropriately. And now that we're having some of our engagements actually come to a close, we are thinking again around how we report back to stakeholders on the results, so to speak, of our various engagements. So I think, again, in a nutshell, in terms of what we had contemplated for this business initiative, we believe the work is complete. And again, all of the day-to-day things that we're doing in relation to this work, it really is just part of our day-to-day operational framework. So again, that's all I had on this one, but happy to take any questions should there be any.
We've got a question from Akira from TransAlta. How did you measure the success of the SEF? What do you view as the substantive changes with the SEF?
Well, I think that's part of the question that we're thinking about, right, in terms of the report back, because it was, again, thinking about how do you measure something from either a quantitative or qualitative perspective. So I think most people, again, who are participating in our engagements are aware that we're doing a lot of surveys and whatnot to sort of gauge how stakeholders have felt that we've lived up to some of those principles that we've set out in our framework. And so, again, our intent is to report back on how we've measured up against that. And so I think, again, we'll try and hone in on as many quantitative metrics as we can. And I think there's also, especially in this area, the qualitative is also important. So again, a lot of the narrative type feedback that we get, conversations that some of us, again, are having within industry, we really, again, are paying attention to that and certainly want to continue to invite you to give us those comments. And again, we'll sort of report back generally on what we're hearing in that respect as well.
And then there was a second part. What do you view as the substantive changes with the SEF?
That's a good question. I think in terms of the substantive changes, certainly internally, we actually didn't have, I would say, we didn't have accountabilities that were actually connected with stakeholder engagement. And so again, we're now sort of viewing this as a specialty in and of itself. And so I think, again, there's a much greater focus and emphasis on how we're approaching our engagements, again, that we're coordinated, that we're thinking about them in the right strategic way. So I think that was a real substantive shift that we made. And I think, again, that internal shift, hopefully that's being externally, you're starting to see that, right, as we're rolling out our various engagements. So I think, for me, it's the biggest shift has really been around sort of the mindset of how we're approaching our engagements and ensuring that, again, as we create our engagement strategy, it is providing the right opportunities at the right time, and that stakeholders, again, have a really meaningful way to contribute and offer in their feedback. And then, again, we're open to that feedback and actioning it. That's how I characterize those.
Thank you, Pauline. and Akira. Any more questions on that? Okay, I think we can move on to Miranda.
Thanks very much, Karen. And Mike, you can maybe jump into the into that first slide. Thank you. So many of you will have participated in conversations as we headed into 2020, where we were looking at initiatives from a market perspective. And we had said that we were really focused, we wanted to recognize the importance of stability in the marketplace and not have any change happening for the sake of change. And so we had narrowed our focus from a market perspective on three areas that we felt were continued to be important in terms of evolution. One was ensuring the sustainability of the market going forward. So, you know, if a change is needed to manage that sustainability, that was important. The second is in terms of increasing the flexibility on the system that is delivered by the market and where can we do things to incent that flexibility. And the third was in terms of removing barriers to entry and participation of new technologies. So a recognition, again, in line with the strategic plan as Todd laid out, that new technologies are evolving, the world is changing, and we want to make sure that the market can continue to keep pace with that. And so we had some quite narrow focus in terms of market work this year. So as many of you, if not all of you, will be aware, we did an assessment of the pricing framework in the energy market. That report was submitted to the minister in July as required. We're hoping to be able to share that report with all of you shortly, but that does require permission from the minister. But you know, the first thing I would do is want to thank all of you who provided your insights and worked with us through that assessment. And you did all see our draft recommendation, and so we appreciate the participation that we had there. The second was updating our flexibility assessment, given policy changes since the last time we had done that. That is also complete. It was posted, I can't remember if it was in July or late June, I think it was July, to our website. And we can now, as we look forward, look at that analysis as foundational to help us with particularly assessing different flexibility initiatives and the potential timing for those initiatives. And that assessment is work that we will continue to update on a regular basis and provide that information broadly. And then the third is one that is underway, which was assessing a move to sub-hourly settlement. And many of you are participating in that engagement, and that is ongoing as we speak. And Mike, I'll get you to move forward. And so that was the market side of things. The second piece, which has actually been, I think, is an area of far more change, is an ambition to modernize the ISO tariff. And people will ask me, what do we mean by modernize? And we're trying to recognize that, again, the world is changing. The way the electricity system is used is changing. The types of things that are connecting to the system in terms of technologies are changing. And our tariff really hasn't changed dramatically in many, 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 probably decades. But also, it isn't particularly agile and doesn't adapt particularly well to change. And so our modernization efforts are really focused in two areas. One is in terms of the content of the tariff and sort of adapting it to the changes that we're seeing, and ensuring that it's sending good pricing signals and ensuring that it's fairly allocating costs to those who are using the system. But then the second is sort of more structural and is looking at the actual structure and regulatory processes around our tariff, and are there ways that we can make it more agile or adaptable in the future and not sort of require a 3-year regulatory process every time we update the tariff. And so that's been in progress for some years. It will continue in a variety of ways, shapes, and forms to continue to be in progress for the next couple of years. We are about to reinitiate the stakeholder engagement that we had paused due to COVID impacts. We are looking at, so the first piece that we looked at in terms of content in the tariff was around bulk and regional rates. And so we expect to file our application related to that early in 2021. And then we have identified two other modules to address other content issues. And then at the same time, in 2021, starting to look at that restructuring, simplification. You know, our tariff is extremely complex, particularly for somebody who may be new to Alberta or new to the industry. So are there ways that we can simplify it? Are there ways that we can restructure it, again, to help us towards that goal of having it be something that is more dynamic and more has more ability to adapt to changes in the industry than it has today? And I think we can move forward again. And so I think this is just more details around this. This was specifically about the 2018 general tariff application. So this is already well into sort of its regulatory processes. This is less about modernization and less about sort of the future. And this is more about where are we at today. And of course, there's still work to do to get that all the way through and to implement aspects that changed through this most recent tariff into our other processes and updated rates and all of those kinds of things. So, so it's really two pieces in terms of the tariff. This is much more base business, something that has been going on and is a lot less about big change. Whereas I think looking to the future, we're looking a lot more at some more foundational change. Mike, you can move those slides ahead. But I think maybe before, so still within the framework, and this touches on Akira's question earlier to Dennis, but maybe before I hand over to Dennis, we'll see if there are questions for me.
Thank you, Miranda. We've actually got quite a few questions. I'll start with Ed DiPalazzo. Is the storage tariff included in your 2021 plan?
Yes, it is.
From Victoria, where can you find a clear list of what will be included in each module of the new tariff filing?
It is in one of our filings with the commission, but I could track that down and we can make that available. I don't at my fingertips, I don't have which document it's in, but we can get that to you, Victoria, and to anybody else who's looking for it.
Thank you. From Akira, what do you view as complex about Alberta's tariff? It is actually relatively simple.
So clearly there are different perspectives on that, Akira. You're the first person I've ever heard say to me that it's actually relatively simple. So I think, you know, at a high level, the principles of it, I think you're right, are relatively simple. But I think when you get down into the very detailed pieces of our tariff, we certainly hear from folks who are going through, for example, our connection process for the first time and trying to understand costs and fees and charges that will flow their way, it isn't necessarily all that intuitive. And so I think, and you'll see us talking a little bit later about our mandate from government around red tape reduction. We think there's probably some areas in the tariff where we could make that a little easier to navigate. So that people can understand not only what are their costs and what are the processes when they first join our system and our market, but then what are the ongoing implications to them and how does that all work? I think there are probably some ways we could simplify that.
And I think you acknowledged that Akira had his example limited classes and postage stamps. So yeah, as you said, it's fundamentally it's
Yeah, at the highest level, it is relatively simple, but you know, the devil is always in the details.
Yeah, thank you. And then from Ed, is it reasonable to assume that the 2018 tariff will be approved by the AUC in Q3 since we are nearing mid-August and the process is continuing?
That's a great question, Ed, and I think we are hopeful. But at the end of the day, we can't control commission timelines. And so it will be what it will be. But I think that is our hope, is that by the end of Q3, we'll have clarity there.
Thank you, Miranda. Any more questions? Anything else?
Karen, looks like we've got a question from the virtual, on the virtual side, from Colin. We'll allow Colin to talk. If you want to unmute yourself, Colin, please go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you. This is a little quicker than maybe typing my question. Thanks very much for hosting the session. Really appreciate it. Sorry, Colin Robb with Capital Power. On this tariff modernization, we've seen the latest developments in the compliance filing and the substation fraction. I wonder, is there a need, or would it be helpful to maybe articulate some of that broader vision for tariff evolution, maybe before proceeding, so that everyone, including the AUC, is on the same page of what are the major issues, what are the major trends, how does that tariff evolution sort of fit to address those issues. Maybe a comment on the potential for something like that.
That's great feedback, Colin. Thanks. And I agree. I think, sort of articulating the vision of where are we trying to go is important. I think as we tackled the bulk and regional stakeholder engagement over the last couple of years, I think in terms of articulating some principles and things, I think we've tried to do that with that group. We're just starting to explore ourselves. What are some of the ways we think, we believe we want, we know we want clear price signals in the tariff. We know we want the tariff to be able to adapt to the future that we see. We're trying to understand what are some of the levers and tools we might have to be able to do that. And we absolutely intend to A, share those, but also to gather other ideas and thoughts. And we have had a few conversations with some of the staff folks at the commission, just sort of hinting at this is sort of where we're going. I think it's always a little bit challenging when our existing tariff is still in a live proceeding and we have to manage a little bit that when is it appropriate to have conversations and when, is there sort of a sequestering going on and it's more challenging to have those conversations. But I appreciate that feedback, Colin, and I think we could absolutely do a better job of articulating where we're ultimately trying to get to.
That's great. Thanks. I appreciate that. And just thinking to the timing for some of those major tariff initiatives over the next year, I know we've been advocating for keeping this tariff work moving. And so I don't want to not sort of taking a different position on this, but maybe between some of those latter modules that you plan to file and the first module, maybe there's some sort of process outside of the commission where there is some room for dialogue with stakeholders on that broader strategic vision of what the tariff is.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Thanks.
And I think those things can, to some degree, happen in parallel. They don't have to wait.
We have another question from Richard Penn from IPCA. In terms of sub-hourly settlements, did you notice that on June 7th, load being shed and frequency being significantly lowered below 60 hertz? That makes price, that market price did not reflect the issues.
Yeah, I mean, June 7th is a bit of a unique event in that, with the frequency issues and the resulting load shed there are all things that have to happen instantaneously when you know, something like losing the intertie happens. And so, you know, the market at the time was reflecting that we had very high imports and very high wind and very low load. And so the market was probably reflecting the fundamentals that were at play. And in all honesty, I don't think that any market signal in the moment would enable enough load reaction to deal with the frequency loss because it's so instantaneous at that point in time. So I get your point, Richard, but I'm not sure that sub-hourly settlement would have solved that in that particular instance.
Thank you. Any more questions? Any for Miranda? Before we move on to Dennis? Well, thank you for those great questions, and we appreciate those. So we'll move on to Dennis.
Thanks, Karen. I'm on slide 34 for those following along. One of the initiatives we're working through is what we would refer to as optimizing the grid. And so obviously there we're focused on cost implications. We've had significant infrastructure built in the province and on the grid over the last while. And so our focus now is shifting to optimizing that existing infrastructure and I'll say timing or pushing the timing of any new infrastructure out as far as we think is practical. We're balancing cost here against reliability and ensuring FEOC market is enabled. And so that's the ongoing challenge in this space. Some of the things we've been working on in 2020 is around reducing interconnection costs for customers, whether that's supply customers or load customers, and being a little more flexible on some of our standards to allow variances where we can, while we're not impacting reliability in that space. We have been progressing some congestion analysis methodology that we will share both as it relates to system projects and as well as customer connection projects. And here it's primarily in the supply side, where you've got the variability, unpredictability of when new supply is going to come onto the grid, and bringing some probability analysis into the congestion implications of that. And that's, again, to help manage timing of when that infrastructure needs to be triggered for construction. And in that respect, we're very much in the space, particularly for system projects, to assess milestones and milestones associated with construction timing, so we can push the cost or the larger cost out in time until we're confident that the infrastructure is needed. And so you'll see that method and approach used in our go-forward system projects, including the upcoming CETO project and CRPC project that we continue to progress forward. As we look to 2021, we're going to continue to look for ways to maximize the use of the existing infrastructure. We'll look for technologies that we can apply to increase the use of the existing infrastructure. In this space, we will also look to non-wires alternatives where we can. Again, we may be constrained with existing regulations there, but we're motivated if there's lower cost solutions for non-wires alternatives to pursue those through whatever methodologies we can. That is primarily on the transmission side. Obviously, that's our mandate and our focus. On the distribution side, you will have seen, if you were engaged in the AUC DSI process, we have taken the view that distribution companies should also seek to competitively procure non-wires alternatives to try to optimize their infrastructure. As far as competitive procurement of transmission infrastructure, again, the regulations are fairly constrained in where we can apply that methodology. And so as the Department of Energy and the government proceed with any transmission policy review or regulation review in that respect, we will offer our views and feedback into that as an ISO I'd say we're looking for flexibility to allow us to use what methods we can to both optimize the existing system and time future infrastructure out in time to when we need it. In 2021, we're going to also look at, I'll call it our technical standards and rules that are potentially driving costs for new infrastructure and seeing if we can find ways to be a little more flexible there. And we're pursuing, you would have seen we've done some capability maps at the regional level. We're going to see if we can develop them at a lower level, down at the planning region, maybe substation level, so that the industry can understand where we see existing capability and capacity on the grid and provide the at least the awareness signal that we've got capacity over here, but we don't have much over there. And so that's part of what we'll be looking at in 2021. And so hopefully, Akira, I answered your question there on the competition for regulated wires. Obviously, for distribution, that's not in our mandate or wheelhouse, so we've got no capability in that space. That's up to the commission and the DFOs to look at. The next slide, 35, we're continuing to focus on what I would describe as distribution coordination. This is obviously connected with Todd and our strategy around the evolution of the power system and the transformation that's unfolding. And we obviously see that a significant amount of that transformation is occurring on the distribution system and downstream onto the customer side of the meter. Therefore, we feel we need to be proactive and in front of it as much as we can. To that end, we developed a distribution or distributed energy roadmap that has again been focused on our mandate as an ISO, which is around reliability, tariffs, markets, regulatory implications. We will continue to progress that forward in 2020, focused on the technical interconnection requirements and trying to get a process in place so we know physically where distributed resources are. That's obviously the first step in understanding the impacts onto our mandate. Additionally, another initiative we've been progressing is what I describe as the TXDX coordinated planning framework. And that's all around understanding the interface between the transmission system and the distribution system and the reliability, planning criteria, what we as an ISO will use to guide our decision-making as to whether transmission projects are needed when being requested by distribution companies for infrastructure. And again, if there's any future AUC or government DOE-driven distribution policy or regulation engagements, we will be fully engaged in those, offering our perspectives on those engagements. And so in 2021, we'll continue to move the DER roadmap forward. Miranda talked about facilitating integration into the markets for DER. It's all part of the same conversation around market participation and so on. And then we should have concluded the TXDX and start applying it in 2021 and working the kinks out in that respect in 2021. So that's kind of the focus for us in the distribution coordination space.
So the next initiative.
Todd, just before you go, that we just have a question from Akira to Dennis.
Has the ISO already advocated for a more significant consultation on the T-rate? Is the government aware of the impediments that exist in the legislative regulatory framework to enable non-wires alternative procurement?
So I think the industry is aware that the DOE and the government are working through their stakeholder engagement on the transmission policy and transmission regulations here. Later this year, I can expect we will be well engaged in that once the government moves forward with it. And so we will be messaging and requesting more flexibility on the non-wires alternatives within the regulations to the government, because we feel that that gives us the ability to be selective where we can to reduce costs and still maintain reliability in the go forward. So that's our understanding of the plan. I'm sure the DOE will come out when they're ready to with their engagement to industry, including ourselves and yourselves.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. So we've got a question from Richard Penn. For several years, IPCA kept asking the ISO to review dynamic ratings for existing transmission lines. Did that simply fall by the wayside, as there seemed to be new solar systems to monitor dynamic line ratings?
Good question, Richard. I'm not sure the history here at the ISO around dynamic line ratings, so I'll follow up on that to see where we're currently at. I am familiar with the various technologies for dynamic line ratings, and so we will include looking at that going forward into 2021. Recognizing dynamic line ratings can both increase line ratings and reduce line ratings in the moment, depending on what the conditions are and the assumptions for line ratings. So that will be one of the technologies that we will have on our radar for 2021. And I'll follow up as to current status on that and the history, so I have some precedence of what we've already looked at.
Great. Thank you, Dennis and Richard. Are there any more questions?
Yeah, Karen, we've got a question from Colin Robb from Capital Power. And Colin, there you go. Please go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you. Dennis, just a question relating to the system projects congestion analysis that you mentioned. Is there a strategic change here? Are you looking at greater use of 15.2 of the TREG right now, or does this reflect sort of normal course of business for you, prior to an actual TREG review?
Good question, Colin. I describe it this way. Our congestion analysis methodology is more to help us have confidence as to when we need to trigger infrastructure. We're still planning our transmission system to be congestion-free per the regulations. Obviously, planning relies upon forecasts and a bunch of assumptions. And so you may never always be right as to what actually unfolds. And so we will continue to look at Section 15.2 as a tool to inform, and if we run up into a situation unexpectedly that we're actually running into congestion. Our intention is we'll have a stakeholder session coming up, I think it's planned for September, to kind of go through our congestion assessment methodology and connect that through to milestones and the approach we're using there, primarily for system projects, as well as customer connection projects, because they're a little different because they're very localized. They tend to be more localized, the customer connection ones. I think really what it's about is to try to push the timing of infrastructure as close to need as we can from a construction perspective, and we're using congestion methodology and assessments to time that more closely to need, if that answers your question.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it.
And when we file our CETO project, which is coming up soon, I think we're hitting the button tomorrow. We will go through that more detailed project-specific methodology for CETO in the regulatory process, because I think it's the most effective is to do that with the interveners in that particular hearing. So that'll hopefully also help answer questions as we go through that process.
Any more questions for Dennis on optimizing the grid and distribution coordination before we move on to Todd? Go ahead. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Karen. So the next business initiative was settlement audit. This is actually a request of stakeholders to perform a settlement audit. In the United States, you might be aware of something called the SOC audit, which is a service organization controls audit. This is actually an initiative that we planned on actually conducting in 2020 and having it completed in 2020. But the result of COVID-19 really forced us to take some of our internal resources and focus on our core business. So what we're planning to do is really do the readiness assessment in 2020 and then do the audit in 2021. So it's really just a timing issue. Still plan on doing it. It's just been deferred a bit. So fairly straightforward.
Any questions for Todd? From Richard Penn, is this audit by an outside agency?
The audit will be done by a third party.
Thanks, Todd. Any more questions on the audit? Okay, we can move on to Pauline, Red Tape Reduction Initiative.
Thanks, Karen. Okay, so the red tape reduction work, that is a shiny new business initiative for us for 2020. And I think, again, most stakeholders have an awareness of this one, given the work is, again, mandatory work for us and is driven by an overarching government program with respect to red tape. So the goal for us and all other agencies that are subject to the program is to reduce our regulatory requirements by a third. And the target date to achieve that is March of 2023. And there are a number of annual targets that we have to hit before, again, reaching that ultimate 33% reduction. As of March 2023, once we hit that target, basically we'll be operating with a cap, so to speak, on our requirements, such that if we are looking to introduce a requirement somewhere into one of our pieces of documentation, we have to oust a requirement from somewhere else. And so again, that's ultimately where we'd like to get to. In terms of, again, just to give you a sense of what a regulatory requirement is, it really is any action, obligation, requirement that a participant must take to carry out their business, to access a government or agency program or service. And so, again, these are all requirements that are captured in externally facing documents. And for the most part, they're easy to spot because they tend to be associated with shall or must requirements. But that's not always the case. And again, there are, as we've done our review, we've uncovered various implied requirements, if I can call them that. And so again, even just doing a count in the first instance has been quite an onerous exercise. In terms of what we've been up to in the first part of 2020, we've really been establishing an inventory of all of our documents. And again, we've got a lot of different types of documents where our requirements are currently sitting. They're currently sitting in our ISO rules, also in our tariff, and as Miranda had mentioned earlier, they're sitting within our information documents, and then as well in a number of sort of what I'll call our more sort of generic business process documents that are publicly facing on our website. So we have done that inventory. We've counted all of those documents, not once, but twice, as per sort of the government directions on this program. And now we are in the exercise of developing a very detailed work plan, sort of for the next year, as well as for the following 2 years. The work plan is in essence a roadmap in terms of how we plan to achieve our 33% reduction. We have, again, noted on our website some of the areas of focus for us. In the very near term, we are taking a good hard look at our information documents. One of the reasons for that is that if we want to introduce changes into those documents, it's very easy for us to do that because it doesn't trigger any additional regulatory process. So again, that's on our list of things to do here over the coming months. In terms of things that are, I think we use the term longer term on our website, but it's really not that long term. It's sort of on the heels, again, of work on the information documents. We'll be looking at our tariff, again, as Miranda mentioned, and also the connection process as an area of opportunity. The rules, again, will also be under review, but as it pertains to the rules and the tariff, again, as everyone understands, if we are looking to make changes in those documents, it will trigger a regulatory process through the Alberta Utilities Commission. And so, again, we're just looking at the timing of how we want to introduce those changes and thinking again about, again, how we want to go about engaging on those changes so that the outcome of the regulatory process is hopefully a little bit more efficient. In terms of, you know, stakeholder visibility of what we're doing, I think, again, as it comes to any of our authoritative documents, stakeholders will have an opportunity to weigh in on what we're proposing as part of any engagement process that we have prior to filing an application with the commission. So I think, again, you'll see what we're thinking there. And I think, you know, again, as part of this red tape reduction work, obviously the big driver of this is the government's program. But I would also consider a lot of the other work that we're doing in terms of trying to streamline internally and whatnot, even though it's not directly related to regulatory requirements, we are, again, trying to be more efficient internally. And as I was thinking about it, it sort of even gets back to Akira's question a little bit earlier. You know, again, how can we use more tools, leverage our stakeholder engagements more effectively? So that, again, we can reduce proceeding time on the back end or narrow sets of issues that are going forward to the commission on the back end. And so, again, we're playing with a number of different tools to ensure that, again, we have the most efficient process, hopefully, as possible to get changes made to our documents and just generally to make things more efficient for us and for stakeholders at the end of the day. So hopefully that gives you a sense of what we've been up to in 2020. And this initiative, again, will extend through to 2023. Happy to take questions if there are any on this one.
We've got one from Chanel Sinclair. Pauline, do you consider ETS changes to minimize red tape? So I guess if there were changes to ETS, would that be a red tape?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you're thinking. So certainly the ETS manual is one that we've looked at, just because, again, there are a number of requirements that are in the manual. So if that's what you mean, Chanel, yes, that one is being looked at.
Any more questions for Pauline? We can move on to Miranda.
Thanks, Karen. And before I jump into any of this, I thought I would answer Victoria's question from earlier. It's the joy of technology is I can get quick answers and not have to get back to you after the meeting is done. The list of what we're planning to include in the different phases of tariff filings next year was in our compliance filing to the commission on January 31st. And it's also available on our website if anyone wants to take a look at that. So I'll tick that off my list as a question that's now been answered and not have to follow up afterwards. And so as we look to 2021, I think we still have largely the same focus in the world of market initiatives that are about long-term sustainability, enabling integration of new technologies, and supporting increased flexibility on the system. None of this should be a surprise to any of you because I think we've had a market initiatives sort of plan that spans multiple years available on our website and it's been updated recently. In the world of flexibility, the two nearer term items that we were looking at and we've been looking at for a couple of years are around ramp tables and dispatch tolerance. And as I said earlier, it's our intention to now that we've released the updated flexibility assessment, to take a good hard look at appropriate timing for these initiatives. And then the third one on the list there is reviewing the mothball rule, which was a commitment that we had made when we put the existing rule in place. Many of you were participants in that discussion and may remember it was an expedited filing. It was always intended to be sort of an interim rule because at the time, our expectation was that the capacity market would have rules that would address essentially mothballing. We're gonna follow up on that commitment to taking a look at the reporting requirements of the mothball rule. In my ongoing conversations with the MSA, I know they have some thoughts around how we can improve the ability to affect compliance on the mothball rule. And I know a few stakeholders have raised a couple of concerns with the existing rule, you know, which we granted put together pretty quickly a couple of years ago. And so that is on our to-do list starting at the end of this year to take a look at that. And so maybe, Mike, you can move to the next slide. And so this is just more details on what it is that we're planning to look at. Again, I don't think any of this is news to any of you, that these are the things that are on our list for the market. And again, maybe I'll get Mike to move forward. And then the other piece, and this is a lot about enabling the integration of new technologies, but it also links into flexibility a little bit. It links into a broad goal we always have of removing any barriers to entry or enabling improving competition, increasing participation in these different products. We think ultimately the more competition we have, the better the price outcome for the ratepayers that are paying for these reliability services. And so we're not necessarily, in fact, we are not looking at sort of wholesale redesign of the ancillary service market, but we are looking at what are ways that we could increase competition, enable participation by technologies that may not be able to today, potentially taking a look at the technical qualification rules, taking a look at size requirements, all of those kinds of things to enable greater competition in these areas. And I'm happy to take any questions before I hand it off again.
Got a question from Chanel Sinclair. Is the mothball rule being looked at in isolation, or is the ISO also reviewing retirement rules?
So I think, Chanel, I don't know that we can look at the mothball rule and not sort of contemplate other rules that touch on outages. And so I've had people, that's the first time I've had the question specifically about retirement, but I've also been asked about long lead time. And so I think understanding where our various rules about taking assets out of service intersect and making sure that we have good, clear rules going forward. We don't specifically, now I'm working from memory, but I think requirements around retirement are actually largely more in our tariff than they are in terms of the contract notice as opposed to in market rules. And so I think, you know, whenever we look at things, we want to make sure that we don't miss things and we look at things holistically, but we also aren't trying to sort of wholesale blow everything up and start over.
Thank you, Miranda. Any more questions for Miranda? Okay, we've got one from Richard Penn. Would you agree that if there are any ramp costs, et cetera, they should be included in the pool price rather than back pocket charges so that load can factor them into their consumption decisions?
So I think I've stated my thoughts on this on the record more than once, but I would agree. I think there were times when a variety of jurisdictions, including us, were debating, Richard, whether we might need some kind of a special ramping product. In all of our analysis, at no point have I ever seen the what would actually drive that. And so I'm not a big fan of any kind of special ramping products. We do think that the market and the pool price is the right place for all of those signals. What we're specifically looking about in the short term is a requirement for generators to submit ramp tables. So some of you may recall we looked at this. We've talked about this for a couple of years now, where today assets provide us with a ramp rate, but it's a static ramp rate. And in reality, particularly large generators ramp at different rates depending on where they're starting from. And so it's adding, you know, Pauline cringes anytime I talk about adding requirements now because of our red tape reduction needs. But, it would be adding requirements to submit a ramp table so that as operators, we better understand the ramping capability depending where we're at in the merit order and where assets are currently dispatched at. So that's really where our priority is in having better information about what's there today.
Right. Thanks, Miranda and Richard. Any more questions? Okay. We can move on to technology integration initiative with Dennis.
Thanks, Karen. So for context of our focus here for this initiative, this is primarily all about integrating new technologies across the electricity value chain into our mandate and the implications those new technologies may have on our mandate. And when we talk about our mandate, there's a few areas that we are cognizant of because it's very interconnected. That's the reliability aspects, obviously, onto the power system and the grid, tariff implications, market implications, and then regulatory policy implications as new technologies across the value chain are both maturing and starting to connect into the network or wanting to integrate into the network. In 2020, we're primarily focused on getting our internal awareness processes in place so we can proactively be aware of new technologies that are coming forward that we may need to potentially integrate in the future. And understanding our actual integration processes so we can, again, proactively have action plans in place to integrate new technologies that want to connect both to our network or get into our markets. We are working on an external engagement plan for 2021. We've deliberately pushed that external engagement out into 2021 due to COVID. Part of what we're thinking to do is put together actually a written technology forward, essentially the ISO's view of what we see coming technology-wise across the electricity value chain and the potential implications it has on our mandate, and engage externally with the industry to get their perspectives on that, see if we're missing anything from our awareness perspective, see if our priorities should be different than what we're thinking we need to progress on. So that's kind of the context of this initiative. The energy storage roadmap would be a good example of an action plan of integrating a new technology into our system, markets, tariffs, etc. And so we've done a fair bit of work of that in 2020 because we've got connection projects for energy storage that want to get onto our grid and into our markets. And so we've worked that through with information documents, essentially wanting to enable within the constraints of existing rules and regulations, because trying to change rules takes time. And so that we would call a longer term part of the roadmap. So the roadmap for energy storage will continue into 2021. We'll work there looking at longer term implications now, any ISO tariff that Miranda talked about, as well as any ISO rules that we might need to change to further enable integration, and plan that and work that forward from an energy storage perspective into 2021, as well as we will implement the internal process changes for awareness and integration of technology and drive externally our first technology forward and engage with stakeholders to get their input on that. So that's kind of the plan and the focus from a technology integration perspective. All focused on the value chain, not internal technology adoption. That's all I got for that one.
That's it? Great. Yeah. Thank you, Dennis. Any questions for Dennis? Any final questions on what's been presented so far? OK, Okay, we can move to the next slide. So we want to thank you all for attending this first session on the business initiatives, and we would appreciate your feedback on this session. So there'll be a quick initial survey that you'll get before you close down when the session ends. So rather than emailing you something to fill out, there'll be a quick survey right after the session. The questions will be the following. The purpose of the session was clear. The information was presented in a clear manner. The session was valuable. Oh, I've got a raised hand from Ed.
Ed, we'll ask you to unmute. There you go.
Great. Just a question for probably Dennis, just around loss factors. And from a developer's perspective, it's quite concerning that you get your loss factors once you're coming on the system from the ISO. And the process to develop loss factors is very complex. Does the can you see the ISO providing a service to customers, to new generation providers in 2021 for a loss factor estimate for their projects?
That is a question for me, Ed. Thanks. Don't know the answer to that. Let me take that back. I think I understand your ask is from a future developer or future supply connection. Is there a way the ISO can provide some forecasted or indicative future loss factors that you can factor in economics from a decision-making perspective? So if I've captured that correctly, I'll take it back. I'm sure you're well aware that the loss factor methodology is a very simple, easy to do math process. And so it should be really easy for us, sarcastically, as I say, to provide a forecast out. But we'll take a look at the ask and see what's possible and whether we can offer that or not.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. We've got a question from Akira. Will you put budget dollars by the initiatives as we progress? So I don't think we're planning to put specific budget dollars by the initiatives. We're in the process of our budgeting right now. These are the priorities we see for the ISO, and we're not expecting to do a lot of incremental hiring to achieve these priorities. So I don't think we'd be looking to put the dollars by the initiatives, but I don't know if Todd has anything.
I think as you said, we're just in the budgeting process. These initiatives really be an allocation of resources between initiatives and base business. So as you said, right now, we don't plan on adding any resources or incrementally adding any resources for these, but we're just in the middle of our budgeting process right now. So working our way through it.
Thank you. Here's a statement from Evan Berry. I want to thank the ISO for this session and in particular, the participation of all the VPs. Big improvement, and I'm sure Karen and Todd appreciate being off the hot seat we put them on last year. Yeah, we appreciate it as well.
I was going to say thumbs up to that response,
yeah,
Evan.
For sure. Yeah. Again, we hope this was valuable for everyone and added to the process, and I think it was valuable for us as well.
So Karen, just before we go to next steps, I'm actually going to just do the poll right now.
Okay.
So we'll just launch the poll. And if you guys on your computers or your phones can answer, we've got one, we'll do the question before we do the poll. We've got one more question there, Karen.
Oh, a statement from Akira. Thank you. Very helpful and informative. Thank you. Thank you for that. And we appreciate all the feedback we got during last year's process. That helped us kind of form this year's process. So appreciate that.
All right. So I'm just going to launch the poll now. So I'm launching polling. And if you could answer the three questions that you now see on your screen. And we're just slowly getting everyone answered. And then I will share the results once I see we've got the majority of our stakeholders here. All right, I think we're at the end. So I'm going to just end the poll and I'm going to share the results. And so we do see that we've got a couple no's on the information was presented in a clear manner or the session was valuable. So we would be very interested in hearing what improvements could be made to this. And there will be a comment matrix posted today that you could complete and forward any of your improvement ideas we would love to see. All right, thank you.
Thank you for that. As Carla mentioned, there'll be a comment matrix posted to our website, and there's the path on the ISO business planning section. So you'll have till August 27th to complete that. And then the ISO will provide the responses by September 14th, which is a week before the next meeting. Move to the next slide. And as mentioned, the next session will be September 21st with a similar format. And the purpose of the next session is the following: to present the stakeholder input that we provided after this session and present and discuss ISO consideration of stakeholder feedback and plans for 2021. So we'll have the proposed business initiatives at that meeting that we'll be taking to the ISO board. However, you'll have an opportunity to comment again when we do the technical session. You'll be able to comment on the costs and the business initiatives again after that process. So I don't know if anyone has anything else to add from the panelists or any final comments. Okay, well, we'll await the comment matrix and we'll see you again on September 21st, hopefully. Thank you.
Thanks so much.